I think it's the right moment to recall what the law said often and often again, that whenever Europe deepens or whenever Europe enlarges, we need to reinforce cohesion policy. And the past successes were successes just because cohesion policy was there. So it is more needed than ever.
Hello and welcome to this final episode of Region Waves, the podcast series on local solutions to global issues brought to you by the European Commission Directorate General for Regional and Urban Policy. Today, we'll be doing something different, as it is fitting to wrap up this podcast by looking back at what cohesion policy has brought to European regions, at how the policy performed in times of unprecedented challenges for the EU. And of course, we will discuss what lies ahead for Europe and how cohesion policy can adapt. For this special overview, we will be discussing about the 9th Cohesion Report, which was published in March 2024 and can be found on DG Regio's website, InfoRegio. We will be doing so with a special guest, no less than European Commissioner for Cohesion and Reforms, Elisa Ferreira, here in an interview by our colleague Simon Litton.
Hello, I am here today with Elisa Ferreira, European Commissioner for Cohesion and Reforms. Welcome, Commissioner.
Thank you.
After the publication of the 9th Cohesion Report, what would you say is the key takeaway from this report?
Cohesion policy is the glue that keeps Europe together, and that so it has performed. I can tell you that in the last enlargement, the member states, the new member states that are not new anymore, but those that joined later, they had a GDP per capita, an income, a wealth per capita of around the half of the European Union. And now with cohesion policy, they are over 80% on average. So this is just one example of how much progress cohesion policy has improved, how much it has delivered in terms of development, of growth. And we all know that the biggest public investor, for instance, in greening, in new energies, is in fact cohesion policy. And this report tells us how Europe has evolved and how cohesion has evolved inside Europe, in particular regional cohesion, how it has evolved in the last years. And it also allows us to draw some lessons directed toward the future. So how can we make the policy even more performant, although it is performing very, very well, but how can we, what are the margins of improvement? I think it's the right moment to recall what the law said often and often again, that whenever Europe deepens or whenever Europe enlarges, we need to reinforce cohesion policy. And the past successes were successes just because cohesion policy was there. So it is more needed than ever.
So as we discussed, the largest or the most significant enlargement took place 20 years ago now. How would you characterize those past 20 years and what role has cohesion policy played?
I think it was a success story with a lot of economies, which means people and territories, growing much faster than before. And on the other hand, giving the other countries in Europe to be able to sell, to invest, to participate in a bigger market, because the internal market requires cohesion policy. If you wouldn't have cohesion policy, I'm sure that would be a lot of movements of people, of capital, that would not naturally, with this speed, achieve what we have achieved like this. Now, if you look at countries like Poland or Croatia, or you see the major change that happened there, as it happened some decades ago in Spain, in Portugal, or in Greece. Now, the challenge is to keep the momentum going and to make sure that we rebalance all the asymmetric impacts across Europe that may come from the functioning of the globalized economy, or they may come from specific policies that have an asymmetric impact across Europe.
Convergence is a word that is used a lot when discussing cohesion policy, but what does convergence really mean? How would you explain it to a child?
It means that When we depart, when we join the European Union, we have different levels and different characteristics, different levels of development. So there are very poor regions, there are very rich regions. We are competing with each other in the same market. And in the ideal world, you would not have any barriers to this movement of goods, of people, of capital, which means you can invest wherever you want. So if we didn't have the policy, the best opportunities in terms of careers, of jobs, the best opportunities in terms of investment would be perceived by all these actors as being located in the most developed areas of Europe. This would create a massive disenchantment for the other people, the companies. They wouldn't be able to resist because the best universities, the best, the most performing banks, the most performing decision makers, they would all be located, and the whole agenda of Europe would be directed towards this area. This, even for these areas, would be very negative, because after a while, like you have in some big cities, some big capitals across Europe, you have so many congestion costs, because the price of housing, so the real estate goes up and up and up. Often the agglomeration is so big that you cannot find a house in the center, so you have to travel to commute. This creates a lot of discomfort for the family life. Whereas if you think of rebalancing growth, of creating other poles, of a multipolar kind of system, you may find, and the COVID taught us this, you may find with the digital connections that you have massively better quality of life if you locate somewhere else, because you can afford a proper house. You have more time for yourself to do what you want to do and not just being, spending most of your day traveling to work, working and coming back from work. So convergence is helping those that need this extra stimulus to also grow faster and being able then to share the common wealth, let's call it like this, and common progress, allowing, as Enrico Letta is started mentioning, allowing for people to move if they want, the right to move, but also the right to stay, and to avoid that certain regions and countries lose their best because they train them, they educate them, and then these people, they have to move away in order to find adequate careers. So this is what we are talking about.
And how would you describe the difference between convergence, solidarity, and redistribution?
The core message is, okay, you have to support and to have solidarity in relation to those that need it. But if you look carefully at the different spaces across Europe, what you have to do is to make sure that you unblock what is blocking development and that you create the right conditions for these regions to grow. Of course, if you are talking about disabilities, if you are talking about very old people that cannot work anymore, you need solidarity. Of course you need solidarity. But another interpretation that is more connected with cohesion concept is to devise strategies that really unblock the potential that exists in that area. And sometimes, of course, the most common request and the most common investments done with cohesion policy is roads, is infrastructures, is supply of water, it's the supply of the network, because this is absolutely basic, but these conditions are necessary, they are not sufficient for a growth, for development. So you've got to add to this a strategy. And often we find that in the most unexpected regions, you all of a sudden can develop, for instance, a sustainable tourism kind of project. You can look at those mountains on which there is no a lot of activity and start offering a very special product of relationship with nature and giving value and visibility to the local history, to the local heritage, to the local gastronomy. So my approach for cohesion is much more on the basis of unleashing the potential that lies in a region, but this requires that you have the capacity to research, to investigate, and then to implement a policy that that performs. But this also requires a lot of concentration on the quality of institutions. What is the quality of the universities, of the leader of the region, of the leader of the municipality? What is the quality of the schools in that area? So quality matters.
What would you say have been some of the key achievements of cohesion policy, and what are some of the concrete examples that come to your mind?
Well, we see so many, so many. But it is, I've been traveling all over Europe and going to the, not the capitals. I mean, I always go to the capitals to salute the government, but then seen such an energy. I was in Cluj, for instance, in Romania. You see a dynamic that you were not expecting. You see it in the northern countries. You see it I was in Alba Iulia, again in Romania. I saw a hospital that was completely refitted from an energy perspective, and the reduction in the bill and the increase in the comfort of the staff and of the patients was absolutely generally recognized. And in fact, they had reduced their energy bill by 40% or so. You see regions that were sometimes very close to difficult borders that were kind of getting out non-environmental friendly kind of industry that are starting to welcome, for instance, a magnet factory using the Just Transition Fund and going very far in a production that is absolutely essential for the battery cars, for instance. In other cases, you see places being, I was in Bulgaria, in Vidin, where cohesion funding supported the requalification of the heritage. And this is something absolutely amazing. So if you go across Europe, if you take a look, you see how much can be done. But of course, we cannot do it from Europe if we don't have an equivalent priority at the level of the member states in order to also value the rebalancing of growth internal to their countries as a source of resilience and a source of growth. And of course, if we move along, you see that if you ask, it is important to make visible to the citizens what was the contribution of this European network, of this European solidarity. If you go to very special areas that cannot be copied everywhere. But for instance, you see the recovery of the heritage in Italy. I mean, you see amazing cases in which the rebuilding of certain of this heritage is at the core of a new dynamic in the area from the touristic perspective. It's difficult to. I already shared some of these figures that show what we mean by growth, but also I would like to pay tribute to the energy that lies in all these regions and to give a word of support to everybody that every day fights against all these external influences and keeps working and creating good job opportunities and good quality of life in all across Europe. And because if you have imbalances, you have fragmentation. And if you are fragmented, you are not strong. So with all the challenges that we are facing, from the climate problem to the demographic aging to the wars in our neighborhood, I think we have got to be together. But to be truly together, we need to avoid fragmentation and to avoid this feeling that there is no place for you. there is place for everybody in Europe. And so we have got to create conditions that this kind of message is felt by every citizen. Doesn't matter where the citizen is, he has got to feel that he's part, he's building Europe. And Europe, I mean, takes account of him or her and wants its participation in the overall progress.
Radio Waves.
Onda Regio.
Radio Waves.
Onde Regio.
Onde Regio.
Onde Regio.
You are listening to Radio Waves.
There are many regions across the EU which are, you could say, underperforming despite their use of EU funds. Could you explain to us what is a development trap and how cohesion policy can help with that?
Well, it is the development trap is a concept that came from the academia, and now we are testing it in the real situation. And in fact, we see two types of problems across Europe, trying to make it simple. It's the level of development. So we have regions that have a low level of development, regions that have a very high level of development, and regions that are in an intermediary stage. But on top of that, you have the long-term trends. And there are regions that at these three levels, each of these three levels, that they are not growing fast enough or they are declining. There are several reasons for this. But for instance, you have regions that were performing quite well. They were rich regions, but they were dependent from an industry, for instance, that in the meantime started losing speed. And sometimes these regions, they lack the capacity to find alternative purposes, alternative directions for their industrial capacity and past. So they need a specific kind of support that is completely different from regions that lag behind because they are very peripheral, so they can't compete, or they are an outermost region that, for instance, lacks technical capacity even to organize the adequate projects to be able to use the European funding. And in this, I paid a special attention, for instance, to outermost regions. They need our special attention in concrete, but for this, you have got to go to the details and understand how much, what is needed in that region. On the other hand, you have regions that are big agglomerations and that are, so they were, I mean, very competitive, but then after a certain point, they are so congested that they have to be always running after the new problems. And these new problems may be they need to create, to enlarge the metro system. They need to build houses. So they fail to use their potential in order, in fact, to lead in the new technology sectors, to start to use artificial intelligence in the management of the city. And so for those cities, it is in their interest that they don't grow so much and that they grow better in more strategic areas rather than growing endlessly in a kind of expansion that ends up being a negative impact on their growth. Also, we see, and we have got to start looking carefully at this, that certain countries that grew a lot, they have grown with massive internal imbalances. And when these imbalances are very dominant, what happens is that this congestion problem starts very often to be felt, whereas in the other regions, there is the permanent discontent and completely brain drain, aging, and flows of the best. And this creates the lack of capacity to use the potential of these regions also to contribute to the global welfare and to the national welfare. This is another kind of problem. So in a nutshell, I would say that each place requires an agenda, a recipe that is adequate to the characteristics of this region. But in fact, we have trapped regions, so to speak, at different levels of development. And this feeling that your son or your daughter has a worse life than yours, that is why when you are stagnant or declining, this is very negative for the European citizens. And this triggers a lot of disenchantment and a lot of blame game. So it is important that, in fact, we adjust the funds, and sometimes it's not funds, it's technical assistance, it's the quality of how you analyze your development agenda that determines success.
Some regions have a more specific problem called the talent development trap. Can you explain what causes this and how the Commission can help a region attract more talent?
I already addressed a little bit this issue, and in fact what you see is that 30%, when a region is not growing sufficiently, I mean, the tendency is for the most qualified people and younger people to live in search for a better life. It's legitimate. So in those cases, and we have worked on it, this brain drain often coincides with trapped regions or with regions that are not growing that as they should. But in fact, we have across Europe around 30% of the population lives in regions that are either in a situation where they have lost their most qualified people, or they are losing them. In particular for these ones, we have created a special support helping these regions to find out what they can do. In a lot of cases, this calls for a very specific strategy that includes not only the universities, the high education centers, what they are doing, how they are performing, but also how the environment, economic environment, is showing the capacity to understand the human value that they have on their side and try to create these links between the universities or the technological centers or the polytechnics or the technological schools and the capacity to create new companies, new jobs and retain these people and offer them careers. So this requires this kind of approach, but also from an urban perspective. Often this requires that you develop alternative centers in medium-sized cities on which you can combine these public services that can really retain this population and also counter the tendency that Europe is suffering from of not having sufficient children. We are aging more and more. This is very good. People live a lot of much more time than in the past. But another aspect is that we need children, we need young people. So our estimates show a very frightening number that in 2050, it's not that far away, we'll have in Europe less 35 million people in working age. So this is really a risk for all of us. And this concentrates particularly in certain areas. And when we think, why the birth rate is so low in Europe? Can we do something better? Can we do something better for families to have a better quality of life, for people to earn higher wages so that they can afford having children? What kind of conditions do the communities offer to them so that they can have good life and have children if they so wish? All these questions, they end up in special recipes for what you need in the urban areas and in surrounding areas in order to create good conditions for alternative locations of young families, qualified people. But you also have to combine a series of things like affordability of housing, careers and jobs, and of course combining all this with the digital capacity that will allow you to work with any company without having to locate in the very congested areas of Europe.
When looking back at the last 20 years of cohesion policy, we've mentioned some of the crises that the EU has gone through. During your time as commissioner, would you say that a large part of your work during this period was in responding to crises?
During this period, in fact, we had very serious crises. We didn't move away from the long-term perspective that characterizes cohesion policy. But with support of the European Parliament, with support of the Council, and under demand of a lot of people and a lot of countries and regions. In fact, we managed to use, I would say, 11-12% of the funding, of the usual funding for cohesion policy, in order to address the emergency situations. So, as most people have recognized and know, we allowed during, in as a response to COVID, and in a couple of weeks' time, we did the support of all the civil servants here and in the member states, and I take this opportunity to thank them, because they were incredible. Working during COVID, in 2-3 weeks, we managed to change legislation to have it approved in the European Parliament, that for the first time voted through the digital means, and the Council. And we managed to shift money from regional fund, social fund, the cohesion fund, to allow member states in this emergency to buy masks, to buy ventilators, to buy computers for the kids to follow up on schooling from home, whatever was needed. Of course, also we co-financed systems of support to small and medium companies, even for the running costs, not necessarily for long-term investment, as we usually do. We co-financed the wages of the salaries of workers that were prevented from working. So it was almost anything that could help the economy and society to keep afloat. In this, member states asked for reprogramming about 23 billion in an envelope that is about, over 300 billion, between 300 and 400. So that's why I was talking about even less than 10%. But in fact, with this, I'm very, very happy now that we looked back, because the level of income per capita on average of the poorest regions and of the most performing regions was back at the level they had in 2019, so before COVID, in 2021 and 2022. So all immediately, and you remember, and people remember, that we were expecting to have a drop in the economy and in unemployment that would be similar to the Second World War. There were, I mean, this kind of estimates. So with this changes of cohesion policy that were immediate, then it was very good to have the prospect of the recovery and resilience plans. But this was at that time still, a positive future instrument, because it took time to organize it. It helped. But the emergency support was, in fact, absolutely essential. And we followed this with the support to welcome the Ukrainian refugees after the invasion by Russia, and after that to support the energy prices for families that could not afford the increase in prices, and small and medium companies. So differently from the 2008 crisis, in which the weakest regions and countries took more than 10 years to be able to get back to the initial level, and in fact since then convergence across Europe was much more delayed and sometimes stopped. So this time, at least, all these, emergency instruments help to bring back to normality whatever was normality in 2019. And so we avoided it. And in fact, instead of unemployment, we started facing increasing demands for workers and this difficulty in finding the right workers for the investments that we have. So I think from that perspective, we did the right thing now looking backwards, because if we hadn't done it, I believe that a lot of regions and a lot of countries, in particular those that depending on tourism or depending on industry that was integrated in international chain production, when all the transports and were stopped, they would have completely collapsed. And so we managed to sustain this risk.
In your opinion, in the future, should cohesion policy evolve into a policy that's more about crisis mitigation, or should it retain its role in allowing regions to share in prosperity?
No, I have no doubt that that the purpose of cohesion policy is to look ahead and to do long-term convergence. We need it in Europe. What we can do is and what we should do, I think, is more and more to anticipate and to have a preventive approach to this. What we can already expect as being a source of crisis. So we couldn't anticipate COVID, we couldn't anticipate the invasion, but we can anticipate climate change, we can anticipate aging. So we can address these issues, and we can, and I hope, introduce in our choices when we select the investments that are financed by regional fund or by social fund or by the cohesion fund, that we make the right choices. And the 9th cohesion report has a chapter exactly showing what we can anticipate already with very sophisticated models on the impact, for instance, of the increase in temperature in the different regions across Europe. We can already anticipate that we'll have a lot of extreme phenomena. So when you build a bridge, when you manage water in a region that will be suffering from scarcity of water, when you decide what kind of road to build, and when you are building or intervening in a coastal area, it is important that you think in anticipation of what will be the changes in this nature, in the elements that global warming will trigger. And so from how to prepare and manage a forest, to how to manage a scarce resource like water, how to manage the extreme phenomena, this requires, in fact, that we think better and more in a more wise way to our choices when we do the investment, as well as preparing for aging and trying to combat it with this support to young people, to young families, giving them a chance to have a prosperous life in Europe, while at the same time preparing to give a good quality of life to the elderly, of course. But the two things have got to work together, because we need to protect our young people, our young generation, and to give them chances, to give them opportunities, so that they also have, like our generation had, a time of peace, a time of progress, and a time of solidarity, but in the positive, not of charity, but giving each person the similar chances wherever they locate across Europe.
And finally, is there one particular message you would like to share about the importance of this policy?
We are big supporters of cohesion, but we need, in fact, this is my first message, to talk about cohesion and how essential it is outside the converted, in particular in our own member states across Europe, and because, we cannot just be speaking among ourselves. So the message, my first message is, in fact, showing what cohesion has done. And when we are talking, and this is my second message, make sure that not only you speak to the politicians, but also to the men in the street. Because sometimes, and this is a natural tendency, you do things that have a lot of European support, but the people, the citizens, they don't often realize, because there is just the little sign with the European flag, but they don't realize how their life would have been different if the European solidarity had not been there for the long-term investments, for climate and energy investments, for the training and education, for the quality of the school, for the road, for the water, but also if Europe was not there during COVID, because from the supply of vaccines to the resilience that we all helped each other to create, that helped us to survive the most unimaginable crisis, it was because we were together that we managed to survive it, and that's how we have to face the challenges of the future.
Commissioner Ferreira, thank you very much.
Thank you also to you.
This was the last episode of Regio Waves, a podcast by the Commission's Directorate General for Regional and Urban Policy. If you like the podcast, be sure to follow us and rate us on the platform of your choice. If you want to engage with us, write us on Instagram or Twitter using the @EUInMyRegion handle. Or come by our Facebook profile called Europe in My Region. I am Mario Casonato, and for the last time, thanks for listening.